this particular meeting between queer theory and psychoanalysis, I thought it might be useful to read the three essays, 113 years on, alongside a queer text. And the text I chose was The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson, which was published in 2015, the same year as the marriage equality referendum in Ireland. And it tells the story, it's the love story between the author, Maggie Nelson, and a fluidly gendered artist, Harry Dodge. Now, I taught the three essays for more than 20 years at university courses in Dublin, so it's been difficult for me to dupe myself into thinking that I'm now coming at it with anything like an open-minded approach. I've always found the experience to be a bit Wordsworthian, a kind of surge in the first two essays, a widely encompassing fling, which is then soberly corralled in the third essay into the acceptable channels of so-called adult sexuality. A lot of what Freud says in the first two essays is not hugely tied to gender. Reading the original text and not checking the footnotes, sexuality comes across as pulsing, pleasure-seeking, more or less always at the ready, because all kinds of things can spark sexual arousal, so reading, travel, even terror. But as I said in my chapter, the summit of gesture by which Freud attempts to confine all these exploding sparks into the low-burning fireplace of domesticity is very like the 19th century arc of the Bildungsroman, where the adventurous of the hero or the heroine is eventually seen as finding its greatest fulfillment in normative outcomes, generally marriage. It's worth noting that in the first essay, Freud himself is critical of what he calls this teleological approach. But the fact is, he yields to it. Many of the psychoanalytic writers in Noreen Aleve's volume are at pains to point out the gap between Freud's innovative thinking and its appropriation and taming by institutional psychoanalysis. And while this is undoubtedly true, I think we need to admit that the gap exists in the three essays themselves, in Freud's own thinking. I think Eve said something about that. So the gap is between the second and the third essay, and even more glaringly, between the original text and the footnotes, which were added to year on year for more than 20 years. So, for example, in the original text, there is hardly any mention of the Oedipus complex, but a footnote in the third essay installs it as the core complex and the linchpin of psychoanalytic theory. The earlier insistence that it is out of the question that these essays should constitute a sexual theory is pretty much scuppered by this footnote, which goes on to say that infantile sexuality reaches its peak in this complex and that through its aftermath, it has a crucial influence on the adult's sexuality. Now, I'm not knocking the Oedipus complex out of the water here, but I am suggesting that within the essays themselves, there is a strong tensional pull in the direction of normativity. And, of course, a strong tensional pull in the direction of androcentricity. In 2018, it is impossible not to reflect on just how androcentric and patriarchal psychoanalytic theory has been, and is perhaps not quite finished being. This bias cannot simply be located in the institution, but really is present and strongly present in the writings of Freud and Lacan themselves. In fact, one might say that Freud's greatest insight, which is that most of our life is lived in a passionately woven nexus of unknowing, may actually underscore and throw light on the ease with which masculinist fantasy could get erected into a wall of seemingly unassailable theory. The phallocentrism of so much psychoanalytic theory is a terrific example of the way our world is framed by what Lacan has called the symbolic order, and how hard it is for us to see outside the frame. So here in the three essays, Freud can recognize that girls, as well as boys, experience a pulsing sexuality. But unlike Joyce in Finnegan's Wake, Freud cannot see this as evidence of what Joyce called the vaulting feminine libido. Instead, for Freud, it shows him that, I quote, the sexuality of little girls is entirely masculine in character. Lacan in the 50s insisted on the preeminence of the phallus, stating that entry into the symbolic order, the world in which we find ourselves, cannot happen without the male sexual organ playing a role of the first importance. Now, interestingly, he was not unaware of the contortions involved in getting women to fit into this schema. Yet he continued to see as inevitable the fact that, as he put it, one of the sexes is obliged to take the other as the basis of its identification. He describes this state of affairs as insurmountable, unacceptable, even stupefying, but goes on to install it as ineluctable in his major examination of the Oedipus complex in Seminar 5. So that was 70 years ago, and the three essays was 113 years ago. But the phallic bias persists in psychoanalytic theory. A year ago, one of the male analysts who endorsed this volume gave a paper in Dublin in which the adjective phallic featured more than 40 times, referring to all kinds of unphallic phenomena, including, bizarrely, female power. Now, in fairness, one can say that the psychoanalytic bias reflects, perhaps even accentuates, the long cultural history of androcentrism and the inertia of language. For example, in the volume, Will Stockton points out that in Shakespeare's sonnet, the word nothing is a euphemism for the vagina. But language counts, and its inertia must be challenged. The events of the last 6 months have shown us just how steeped in sexism we all are. And right before the marriage referendum, our most beloved drag queen, Panty Bliss, made a tremendous speech in which she points out just how homophobic we all are, saying, I am homophobic. How could I not be growing up in the world I grew up in? So for me, this is where psychoanalysis urgently needs the help of queer theory in order to prise our thinking away from what Foucault used to say, to prise our thinking away from what it silently thinks and to enable us somehow to think differently. We need a new vocabulary. Psychoanalysis has really interesting things to say about the subjective dramas of being and not being, about the questions people ask themselves about having or not having what it takes to live as a sexed being in the world. And Elizabeth Grosje is right to resent the degree to which these enormous issues have been shoehorned into masculinist discourse. I think we need help, and we need help from queer theory in exiting these traps. We also may need new theories about theory. And I think in the volume shows us we're beginning to see that there is no way that we can talk about sexuality and hope for what we say to add up in any meaningful way. It just doesn't add up. And what I loved about the Argonauts was precisely that, its failure to be programmatic, the fact that opposites just existed and collided and stayed collided. So, for example, there's an S&M artist who has had a new baby, and she's explaining that caring for the baby makes it very difficult for her to alter her brain sufficiently for her to be able to say, oh, now I'm going out to hurt somebody. So I think this refusal to be programmatic is something for psychoanalysis to think about and something we need to think about. And in the first two essays, I would say Freud's insights were really pushing him in that direction, which is why, in spite of the masculinist underlay, I do consider them to be still quite an exhilarating and important read. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Olga.